And now it's that time again, the Talk of the Nation Summer Movie Festival.
See, Julie, they want to see us together.
All right. Well, quit that clutching on me and I'll sing with you, but you got to quit clutching on me. So what are we going to sing, Johnny? You got me out here. Is that where your plan ends?
Well, I always liked that song of yours, Times of Wasting. Let's do Times of Wasting.
John, I am not going to sing that song. It's inappropriate. I recorded it with my ex-husband. I'm not going to sing it.
Well, there's no better way to put it behind you.
I'm not going to do it.
You, just sing.
Oh, I've got arms.
And I've got arms.
Let's get together and use those arms.
Let's go.
Time's wasting.
Whether it's watching Johnny Cash and June Carter walk the line, the rockabilly of Jerry Lee Lewis and Buddy Holly, the stylings of Billie Holiday and Ray Charles, or more recently the rhythmic salsa jams of Hector Lavoe, Hollywood has captured the lives of countless pop stars on film, solidifying the link between musical genius and immortality. Between the music and the lyrics, we find stories filled with abuse and drugs, love and redemption. This week, we're talking about pop star biopics. If you have a favorite, we want your nominee and a brief explanation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also tunnel your way into our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. And of course, no summer movie series is complete without Murray Horowitz, director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center, which is here in the Washington, D.C. area. And he's been kind enough again to join us in Studio 3A.
My pleasure as always.
Murray, definitions first. What counts as a pop star biopic and what doesn't?
Well, Neil, you know, one thing I hadn't thought of until your intro just now, it's like death is a great career move if you're a pop star, right? They'll instantly make a film about you. I think that we have to limit this somewhat to films about recording stars. Mm. There were, in the old days, some... You really couldn't be a pop star until the days of electronic media.
Mozart was right. A great star.
He was a pop star. And I found an early talkie that probably put paid to Grace Moore's career when she tried to play Jenny Lind around 1930. But you couldn't really be a superstar until there were recordings and radio. Mm-hmm. So as a result, this is a genre that really gets going in the 1940s and 50s. About people who were stars around World War I, so that you got the Jolson story, and you got the great Caruso, and you got even a little bit later, the fabulous Dorseys, about mm-hmm. the Dorsey brothers. And then, of course, once we moved in to the time when rock and roll was actually a memory, the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. So these got to be films about recording stars.
Well, also, there is sort of a subgenre, and that's movies about composers. Yankee Doodle Dandy, Three Little Words, the Cole Porter story.
Right, exactly so. And Words and Music about Rodgers sure. and Hart. Actually, Cole Porter's been treated twice, once by Cary Grant and once by Kevin Kline. When they started looking, it was a kind of a genre, and when they started the all-singing, all-talking, all-dancing musicals in the late 20s and early 30s, they looked for composers, biographies, and songwriters. And when you mention things like, you know, death and drugs and abuse and that sort of thing, I remember being approached once. Somebody wanted to do a film about Duke Ellington, and this producer, the more we talked about it, said, you know, it's a little bit like the 40s and 50s when they did George Gershwin and they did Franz mm-hmm. Liszt, and somebody wanted to do Antonin Dvorak, and they realized he had a happy life. There was nothing, you know, really. And Ellington, despite his many setbacks and ups and downs, it's not really the stuff of drama in the way that, you know, say a Judy Garland would be.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners in on this conversation, as always. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Candace, who's calling us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, I just want to nominate Coal Miner's Daughter.
Coal Miner's Daughter. This is a picture with Sissy Spacek starring as Loretta Lynn.
Absolutely.
And let's hear a little clip from Coal Miner's Daughter.
How many times have you been on the opera now?
I've been on 17 straight times.
People want to know who you've been sleeping with that you've been on so many times.
Who's been saying that?
Gals that have been sleeping with everybody and still ain't been on yet.
Like who?
Oh, let me put it this way. Take it as a compliment. You got them running scared.
I just can't believe I was sitting there talking to Patsy Cline.
Talking to Patsy Cline? That's a really good movie, Murray.
It's a really good movie, and it's a kind of landmark because pop star biopics was based on a book. It was based on Loretta Lynn's biography or autobiography that she wrote with George Vesey. And she was one of the first female superstars in country music, and she really was a coal miner's daughter. The coal miner being played by LaVon Helm of the band, as I recall.
Yes.
And it was a kind of lamp because it was 1980. It's directed by Michael Apted, and it portrays her, I think, quite accurately as a sort of feminist figure or proto-feminist figure at a time when feminism, you know, the word was relatively unknown, especially in coal mining country.
Candace, what did you particularly like about the movie?
Oh, you know, my family is from the South, and this movie, you know, I'm 35, and I was a little girl when I saw this, but it meant a lot to me. I guess it touched my ancestral memory or something, but it's always been a favorite of my mom and my sisters and of course, of mine, and, you know, there's not much more to say other than it just... I think it's the absolute best.
Was she a role model for you, Candace?
Oh, no. I'm no singer. But, you know, I think that the idea of a young woman coming out of the holler is, I guess, what they called it, and making it big in, you know, at that time, the dream was the Grand Ole Opry. I just think that's pretty inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Candace.
Thanks.
And that's the story arc that all of these movies enjoy. The hard scrabble, you know, start and then that meteoric success to the top.
Right. And that's, you know, but it's what's compelling about it is it's real life and when you can find it. And sometimes, of course, in the old days, they'd sort of jimmy things around so that they would get that story arc, even if it wasn't the case. There's a kind of Hollywood over-dramatization of certain aspects of the star's life and then a kind of soft soaping of others. For example, we mentioned Night and Day with Cary Grant,
sure,
which said nothing about Cole Porter's homosexuality. And so there are certain things that were passed over and other things. I would argue that some of the more recent ones, like Ray, it seemed to be a movie more about drugs than it was about the music, and the music is, after all, what will live on.
Mm. Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Lane. Lane is with us from Texas.
How are you? I actually had a comment on some that haven't been made that should be made. In the punk rock market, like the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, those are very, like, sordid tales and very dramatic tales that could be told and haven't been told. They touched on it with Sid and Nancy, but from a musical standpoint, it'd be much better to do a bio doc on the whole band.
You mentioned Sid and Nancy. Gary Oldman plays Sid Vicious, and Chloe Webb plays Nancy Spungen.
I don't think Johnny likes me.
He doesn't like anyone. He's a fool.
And the punk rock genre, I think, Murray, underrepresented. Maybe is it too early?
It may be go ahead, Lane.
It actually sells quite well, too. The documentaries, West Way to the World, documentaries like Another State of Mind have done really well on DVD sales and stuff like that. So I'm curious why it's not touched on.
I think that Neil may have a point here that it may be just a little bit too soon. But it's you bring up a really fascinating point, Lane, which is the number of biographies that haven't been done. Now, maybe there are rights clearance issues and everything. But I just, you know, a little list that I made in my head. I mentioned Judy Garland, but you can think, I mean, nobody's ever done an Elvis Presley movie. Nobody's ever
Elvis
done...
Presley did a lot of Elvis
right.
Presley movies.
That's true. Marvin Gaye, Bessie Smith would be a great movie
Bessie
to
Smith
make.
Would be
Lena
great
Horne
movie.
Would be a great movie to make. Nobody's done it yet.
Mm. Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's go to, this is Ash. Ash is with us from Nashville, Tennessee, from the country music capital of the world.
Not unknown in the music world.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hey, how's it going? I was just wondering if anybody had really noticed the similarities between Ray and Walk the Line. Southern Boy Makes Good, the tragedy with the younger brother early on in life, the drugs and the alcohol and the women. I mean, to me, it seemed like both movies were exactly the same, just one was about Johnny Cash and one was about Ray Charles.
In Hollywood, if they were that close, Murray, you'd expect a lawsuit.
It was. And apparently, near as I can make out, the two, there's another similarity between those two movies, which kind of negates any idea of borrowing or cross-pollination, in my view. And that is, both movies were begun when the subject was alive and with the subject's cooperation. My AFI colleague, Gil Dennis, wrote what I consider is a just brilliant screenplay to Walk the Line. And he worked with Johnny Cash for many, many years before producing this screenplay. And so I think the genesis of each film was independent. So I don't deny the similarities. You're right. But I think it's just they were two Southern boys made good.
Mm-hmm. And one of them, of course, focused a lot, yes, on drugs, but also on a lot of business deals. Here's an excerpt from Ray.
Yeah, you were the ones that taught me that making a record is business, and find the best business deal that you can. Now, 75 cents of every dollar and owning my own masters is a pretty damn good deal. Can you match it?
Ray, we would love to match it, but we just can't. And that's a better deal than Sinatra gets.
A better deal than Sinatra?
And you might argue that with good reason, depending on your view of American popular music. There's also you mentioned the arc and the drugs and all that. There's
sure.
also a moment when the pop star discovers his or her sound. You know, there's that important moment. I mean, I remember it one movie in particular that we may get to talk about, the Glenn Miller story, where he's searching for this sound.
Let's hear it.
I'm not going to be a sideman all my life, a trombone player. I'm going to have a band all of my own. I'm going to play my own kind of music. It's hard to explain, but a band ought to have a sound all of its own, ought to have a personality.
And it's going to fly all the way from New York to Paris. No, that's a different
no,
film.
No, that's a different.
Anyway, the trumpeter's lip gets split, and he rearranges the. And, oh,
right. Who knew that clarinet doubling trombone was so dramatic? You know, but there it is. And this kind of moment happens all throughout. The pop star bios. You hear it in rock and roll all the time.
We're talking with Murray Horowitz on the Talk of the Nation Summer Movie Festival. Pop star biopics is our subject today. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Murray, you talked about death as a good career move.
It was a joke, Neil. It was
no,
a joke.
But a lot of these pictures end up in literally balls of fire as something goes crashing into a mountainside.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, I think actually we haven't had the Big Bopper biopic yet, but we've just everybody else who died in that Clear Lake plane crash has been painted in the movies.
Buddy Holly, of course, and Ritchie Valens.
What is it? Your professional name. From now on, it's Ritchie with a T. R-I-T-C-H-I-E. I got a new last name for you, too. Valens with an S. Ritchie Valens. How's that grab you?
I don't like it.
Well, what do you have to say about it, Ritchie? Nothing. That was one of the things I like about the rock and roll biopics, Neil, is some of them are very sort of relatively modest little films, and they let the music shine through. And the La Bamba was one such movie.
Are any of these, some Academy Awards have been scattered on these
sure.
in the last few years. They attract some pretty great directors. Are any of these great cinematic masterpieces as you're concerned?
What a great question. I'd have to think about that a little more. I'd say some of them were. Certainly, a lot of them have been films of distinction. We mentioned Coal Miner's Daughter. Even though it's very, very long, I'm very fond of a movie called Bound for Glory that Hal Ashby directed, which is based on Woody Guthrie's autobiography. Let me think about that. If I can come up with any more.
Why don't you think while we listen to a little excerpt from Bound for Glory?
I'd like to dedicate a song tonight to all you folks sitting out there in them fruit picking camps. You know, you're squatting there hungry, either too darn hot or too darn cold.
And that, of course, the story of Woody Guthrie and the kinds of songs that he liked to sing. There's sort of another category. I've been touting the story of Vernon and Irene Castle, who don't quite fit vaudeville stars, really, but they didn't fall into that recording era. But Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, what an excuse for a movie.
And it really is an excuse for a movie.
And
I'm
talk
sure
about dying in a ball of fire. You get shot down in World War I. I don't mean to give it away, but there it is.
No, but it's really terrific, and it's one of my favorite musicals. And I have it on the list, even though, right, they're footfalls. These are the people who invented the castle walk and who were a dance-crazed sensation in the early part of the 20th century. But the footfalls didn't come out on the recordings, you know.
No.
It didn't work out that way. But here's another sort of marginal one for you. I'll say, one of our callers mentioned documentaries, and mostly we have to keep documentaries to the side in this because they're not really biopics. They tend to be something else. Although, I think if you wanted a good profile of a musician, you could do a lot worse than D.A. Pennebaker's Don't Look Back about Bob Dylan in his English tour in the early 60s. That is, to me, an extraordinary music documentary, maybe one of the best of all time. The other one that's sort of marginal is he was a recording star, but he wasn't a musician, and that's Lenny, Bob Fosse's Lenny, starring Dustin Hoffman as
Lenny
Bruce.
That's an interesting choice. Let's see if we can get one more caller in. This is Tony. Tony's with us from Grosse Pointe in Michigan.
Good afternoon, sir.
Afternoon.
I just wanted to say one of my favorite movies was Bird. Clint Eastwood directed with Forrest Whitaker. I very, very much enjoyed that movie, especially two parts in the movie. One part where they had the white guy going down south playing Jim Crow with them, and he had to play an albino black man.
You don't think of Charlie Parker as a pop star per se, but at a moment, I think he was.
He was, and it's interesting. There's some poll that jazz historians refer to in the late 40s where it was America's number one pop star was Frank Sinatra or something like that, but in Ebony Magazine or The Jet, one of the African-American publications, Charlie Parker was number one or number two. So he was a genuine pop star, and it's a terrific performance by Forrest Whitaker.
Thanks very much for the call, Tony.
Thanks, sir.
And we've not, at last word, there were two nominees for next week's festival, and I've not heard the outcome. So are we doing high school movies or are we doing radio movies?
I think the jury has come in for high school movies. Yeah, we have not mentioned Murray Horowitz's favorite pop music biopic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who gets
and
the Murray?
The Murray Award, I think, goes to Gary Busey in the Buddy Holly story. Or maybe we did mention it, but I just love the whole movie for that one Steadicam shot when they're going down the stairway from the dressing room to the stage of the Apollo Theater. I could live for that shot.
Let's listen to a clip from the Buddy Holly story.
Who is this?
This is your number one booster rooster. I'm the top jock in Buffalo, and I'm turning the world onto your sound. Now, how about a few words for your fans, the millions of people listening to us right now?
You were on the air?
Yes, we're on the air. Send your nominees for best high school movie.
High school movie.
Talk at NPR.org. Join us again next week. Murray Horowitz will be here. I'll be here. This is Talk of the Nation. Ira Flatow will be here tomorrow with Science Friday. I'll see you Monday.